This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Billboard on Broadway podcast. I'm your host, Rebecca Milzoff, features editor at Billboard and Broadway fan here. So, like many great works of art, plenty of Broadway musicals that are considered classics or among the genre's best are not necessarily totally perfect from start to finish. I have had on the podcast some shows that have gorgeous scores that stand the test of time, but maybe their plots in this day and age feel like they could use a little update. Particularly with reference to things involving gender politics, I'll just say. My Fair Lady is a great example. Soon I will have the new production of Oklahoma on the podcast, which is currently getting a very distinctive reimagining and update on Broadway. And this week I have the much beloved Cole Porter musical Kiss Me, Kate. This is a show that was first produced in the late 1940s, and it has become one of the most revived musicals since then for good reason. It is a totally pristinely constructed musical comedy. It has an alternately hilarious and poignant score by one of the most clever composer lyricists of all time, Cole Porter. Every time I hear his music, I can't believe it was composed such a long time ago. The jokes are, just feel like they were written yesterday. And it has the kind of roles that actors at the top of their game can really bite into. It also has a plot that, in this moment, can maybe feel a little bit problematic. It is really a show within a show about the theatrically bickering exes Lily and Fred, who I would say are both kind of prima donnas, who are portraying Catherine and Petruchio in a traveling production of Shakespeare's The Taming of the Shrew. Catherine is, of course, the titular shrew, whose independent spirit must essentially be squashed so that she can marry the man who can finally control her. And at the play's end, she sort of bemoans being a member of the so-called weaker sex. So that's not an easy story to tell in contemporary times. But the new production of Kiss Me, Kate, through some changes both subtle and more concrete, and also through the stellar central performances of Will Chase as Fred and Petruchio and Kelly O'Hara as Lily and Catherine, feels like it rises to the challenge and ends up as a musical that's both thought-provoking and refreshing and not eyebrow-raising instead. If you're a Broadway fan, the idea merely of seeing Will and Kelly on stage together is just, like, almost too good to be true. They are two of contemporary musical theater's top talents, period, names that inspire worship among some of us. So I was really thrilled to have them on the podcast this week, along with someone who I think is really one of the young rising stars to watch on Broadway right now, Corbin Blue. You may know him best as an alum of Disney's High School Musical, but he has really been proving lately that he is a leading man in the making when it comes to song and dance. And he plays the flirtatious tap dancing Jim Calhoun in the show.
I am Corbin Blue, and I play Bill Calhoun and Lucentio.
I'm Kelly O'Hara. I play Lily Vanessi and Kate.
I'm Will Chase. I play Fred and Petruchio. Intriguing. It's funny to hear you refer to yourself as having two roles, because I find that I think I just thought of them as one. They're like, I mean, you are playing two roles on stage, but I thought of them as being just like completely bound together in a way.
Mm-hmm. That's interesting. I think we think of them differently. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, you know, the shows are laid on top of each other to match in a certain way, in a kind of interesting way. But I think we did a little bit of thought process to kind of pull them apart a little bit if we could.
I think
we're doing well, apparently.
We just acting is so wonderful that everything is just seamlessly woven
together.
And there's even more characters within that, because even when I think about when we open in Venice, those characters aren't
they're
even
just players.
They're just players. I haven't really come up with a name for my player.
Strolling player. We should have a name for
our strolling players.
Strolling player one. So. Strolling player two.
Yeah. I want player seven.
A lot of strolling occurs. Well, the show is like one of those shows that I leave and I just say it was a delight. But it's so cool, first of all, to see it in a space like Studio 54, because I feel like it just immediately helps kind of make it feel a little more modern and make us think of the present, like as we're watching it. I guess the past as well, being Studio 54. I feel like the theater I see a show in, I'm not always as aware of the space as I am there. Actors, does that kind of affect you at all?
It's funny. I don't even think about it in terms like that. But having done a couple shows in there, and you've done a couple shows. Mm-hmm. Have you done anything?
No, I've never. I've only have concerts.
It's an intimate space in my head. But then you look up at during curtain call, and that mezzanine keeps going and going. But it feels intimate, and it feels lived in. But it feels like this belongs there. You know what I mean? A theater piece about a theater piece. It feels like it belongs in that space.
And even the history of the theater itself, because wasn't it originally an opera house?
Yeah.
And then turned into
Studio 54.
Studio 54, yeah. This right. amazing 80s.
Which is kind of perfect
club.
For our show, because we have the kind of operetta-esque aspect of the show. And then we have things like Too Darn Hot and Tom, Dick, and Harry, which are very sexy and kind of, you know, I think it's a great space for it now that we talk about it.
Yeah. No, these are all things I'm just reflecting on as I'm thinking about being there. But what a small opera house also. The tiny little opera house.
Well, that's, you know, it's interesting you say that, because most of them in Europe are small like that. I mean, and people much more, they like to sing opera in those kind of opera houses where it's intimate, not mic'd, but really resonant and stuff like that. As opposed to, we're all used to the Met, so it's too big.
Yeah. That's true. You know, I remember I went to the opera house in Prague and was like, this is the best. It's like a little jewel box kind of situation. Well, I feel like Kismikate is the kind of show that if you're a theater lover and living in the present moment, you hear a production is happening and your first reaction is like, yes, like so happy they're bringing it back. And then you're like, wait, am I allowed? Am I allowed to like it now?
So like the show.
Is this okay?
Funny.
And we'll get to the very subtle ways that I think this production feels attuned to this moment. But how did you all come to the show? And when you heard Kiss Me, Kate, were you immediately like, I'm bored no matter what? Or did you want to have kind of more of a discussion about it?
I mean, we did the concert, and it's interesting, when 2016. And when you get called to do those kinds of things, you know, it's going to be a one-off in your head. You're not even thinking about the future of this piece. You're like, Kelly's doing, I'd like to go do that. And you're kind of doing the straight-ahead version of Kiss Me, Kate. But you're with music stands and a little choreography. But in general, it's just a celebration of the piece and the score, basically, is when they do those concerts. Then when you start talking about doing a production, then it becomes about, all right, so beyond the big, how do we do it in 2019? What does that mean? How are we going to reinvestigate this piece? Does it deserve being reinvestigated? Does it deserve to be done? Deserve? I'm not a huge fan of that word, but you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
And so you dive into talking about, you know, with Scott, especially Scott Ellis, and how we're going to make it different than what came before, and not just because we want to make it different, but how can we? And then how do we hold up this conversation into 2019? How do we do that? And without going too much detail, because I'm sure we'll get there with the changes that we made, the little tweaks and stuff, I was intrigued. But after talking with Scott, knowing Kelly was going to be on board, it was like, I think there's something still wonderful about it to find out and to investigate and change if we need to, tweak if we need to, but not whitewash. And that's certainly why I said a year and a half ago or whatever it was.
I I said yes, knowing you two were going to be a part of it. I had worked with Roundabout about 3 years ago for Holiday Inn, and Scott Ellis had also come on board to help with some of the just some of the scene work and some of the book, and he had said, you know, at some point hopefully we get to work together again, and they approached me about this one. Will was already on board, Kelly was already on board, Scott was on board, Warren Carlisle was on board. I mean, I think I'd be crazy to say no.
So. You're like, what even is this show? I don't care.
I don't care what show we're doing. I'm doing this show.
And it was a good decision.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think when we did this in December of 2016, it was a month after a lot had changed in our country, but it was before January 20th, and we were having a lot of fun with just the score itself and doing this kind of fun one-night thing that we barely rehearsed or anything. I think when the conversation really came down to making a production, like Will said, as time kept getting pushed further and further back, all of a sudden 2019 was coming. It was 20 years exactly from the last revival with our heroes, Marin and Stokes, and so much marination and resonation of all this kind of stuff that's happening in our world. Like, it's all starting to really seep in. And it felt right to kind of go back and two things. Go back and see what we can change. Keep the things we can highlight, especially I'm talking about misogyny and the Me Too movement and all that in general. But also to bring some joy into the picture right now, to bring some laughter, some just kind of simple laughter. That was in my heart. It was a need for that for a minute. And it's a short run, you know, we're just here through June, but it feels really good to just be laughing and also to highlight some grand misogyny and to, you know, to poke fun at it and be angry at it and try to give women some backbone. Anyway. So I think the timing is good.
Well, before we talk about addressing grand misogyny, the laughter part of it, I think a lot of it comes from the onstage relationship between the two of you, which involves a lot of kicking and punching. And I'm sort of curious how many bruises the two of you have from each other.
Oh, yeah.
Kelly has a tiny band-aid on.
Well, this fingernail is coming off. I mean, it's you
that
know,
got closed in a door. That was her own doing. That had nothing to do with.
Well, actually, you
Fred
helped. You pulled the door the wrong way for the first time. So helped.
Will helped. Yeah.
No, but then you're the one that released me.
I think rehearsals was more bruise worthy than the actual
he
show.
He had a huge bruise on the back of his thigh. For
that
a
fight
while.
Used to be.
We pared it down. It
used to be 10 minutes long.
Yeah.
Like something from The Matrix or something. At one point, she was going to pick up a bench and crush my skull. And Scott was kind of like, okay, I don't know that makes any sense.
Not an artistic case. No, we had to get kind of, you know, Rick Sorley and Christian Sorley. We had to get some language.
Yeah.
And then we picked what we wanted. And it seems to be more simple and succinct. But there's a lot of bruising. There's a lot of physical. My hands in general are just getting beat up from, I think I slammed 75 doors. I mean, Corbin dances upside down. I mean, our bodies are all.
Yes.
I mean, we can complain, but you're doing three of the most major, you know, Tom, Dick, and Harry, Jim, Aaron Hot, and Beyonce. You're doing three of the, I think, some of the best choreographed and best dancing
so
I've ever seen.
The choreography is incredible. And for me, that was, you know, talking about, again, why I did come on board. You know, for me, it's so interesting because everybody who comes to see the show, there really is so much going on. I mean, between the storyline that you have between the two of them, but then you also have almost in an entire separate world, Too Darn Hot and the storyline that goes on between Bill Calhoun and Lois Lane, played by Stephanie Stiles. There's a different type of comedy. There's a lot more the choreography and the dancing. For me, I kind of always grew up in the world of dance. Dance has always been my heart and my soul, and knowing that I would be able to do these particular numbers, that was a big calling for me.
And I have to say that I saw like the cutest thing on your Instagram from when you were like, it might have been when you were doing Singing in the Rain, but when you posted a picture of yourself as a little Corbin.
Oh, yes, yeah, with the umbrella.
And then, as a dance fan, it was so great to see you were like, boys, go to ballet class. Like, it'll pan out for you one day.
Now look at him. He's dancing on the ceiling.
Now he's literally dancing on the ceiling.
It's such a, but it's fun to his point, you know, it's very old school musical to have. The book scene, then the book song between the romantic leads, and then we have the ingenues that are going to dance their asses off and do all this work. We would sit out in tech, and I would just be going, Corbin, say no, because Warren will Corbin will do anything.
Anything, yeah.
I mean, that was what was amazing was throughout rehearsals to watch Warren go, oh, now we're on set. Oh, now I've got stairs. Oh, now I've got three levels of stairs.
Corbin, can you jump off the side?
Right. I'm going to have him do this. I'm like, Corbin, just stop. He's going to have you flying through the audience at some point. But we would be in rehearsal. And for the first 2 weeks, Kelly and I literally sat around the table like this and talked to Scott Ellis and our Shakespeare coach for like 2 weeks. And at roundabout, there's two studios. And then upstairs would be the ensemble dancing,
like
their asses
falling
off.
On the ground.
So Warren Carlyle would come downstairs and go, oh, just come up and watch Too Darn Hot. And we'd go up and watch Too Darn Hot, and with them flipping. And then Kelly and I would be walking back downstairs going, so are you going to get that massage in your contract?
Because I'm exhausted.
Just watch. It was unbelievable. We felt like, we literally felt like we're doing nothing and they're doing
something. Like Cirque du Soleil.
It's like Cirque du Soleil upstairs. And yeah. We're like,
so
anyway.
Not even true.
I think Petruchio.
I actually said last night, it doesn't matter. And I think there's this in every show. It doesn't matter what you do, how you start the show. If you're a good show, there's one moment when the audience sits back and goes, okay, this is good. And it's always Tom, Dick, or Harry. So the whole time, like the first, we open the show,
right,
there's several
right.
songs, Wunderbar, So in Love. But once Tom, Dick, or Harry starts, we're in with the audience.
It doesn't mean the rest of the show's not good, but
The King and I, it was the children's march. We're in. They love children. You know, if there are puppies, we're in. For us, it's the dance numbers.
Well, yeah. I was going to say it's a good show if there's one number you watch which with a mixture of entertainment and like worry, which is sort of how I watch you. At all times, I'm like, this is amazing. And also, I'm like, is he going to fall?
Did you pass? Yeah. Yeah.
Bianca terrifies me every night. No, there's never been a night and I've never had a show where I'm up until this point, however many months through, I'm still terrified before I walk out on stage. Most of the time, by the time I get to this point, I'm like, oh, yeah,
I got this.
And it is. It's in my body. But every time I get to that stair section, I had my heart, just the palpitations and the mini little panic attack that I have, specifically when I do the pullbacks down the stairs. Because if there's been nights where if I just miss one,
well, don't say
little
it out loud,
little
now.
Bit, no, but it's just if I, yes, there's just one, if there's just one little bit, then it just the whole thing tumbles. And you know, there have been nights where it there's a mishap, and you know you find a way to catch it, but. Yeah, it's
so good.
It's I guess it's risk and reward. Although it's such a strange number to do because when it's over, we end exiting into the dressing room. So I don't actually get to enjoy
any
of the applause, any of the praise.
Same after So in Love reprise, I walk upstairs while they're, I hear applause in the distance. No, totally kidding.
It is strange to go do this whole number. But we make up for that with Too Darn Hot because that one we all end just burnt out after.
And if you were to look in the wings, in the wings, pretty much the entire cast, crew, everybody is watching every night. Is every night.
And then afterwards, are you just like passed out on the floor?
Yeah, we hope that the audience just keeps applauding so we can
catch your breath.
For a little bit longer.
Somebody recently came and said one of their favorite parts was to watch the heaves of the chests of the bodies lying on the floor.
All in unison.
After it ends, during the clap, everybody's going.
That's when you know it's. That's when you know it's Broadway.
And you know it's real stuff.
Broadway. Well, this all started because I was wanting to ask about the chemistry between the two of you. Mm. And obviously, I think a lot of things on stage that look spontaneous are very planned behind the scenes. I mean, did the two of you immediately have this repartee that seems so natural? Or do you kind of talk through, like, what is the relationship these two people have? And how are we going to reflect that?
I mean, all of the stage, I mean, those are two different kind of things. All of the above. We go
way back.
We go way back. But we love each other way back. I mean, we like from the get-go when we the first thing we did. I just remember the first time knowing I was going to do something with Kelly O'Hara. I was like, oh my gosh, this is going to be amazing. I wonder what she's like. Then you get into the rehearsal room and realize she's a big goofball. And you're like, oh, I love her even more now. I could care less what we do on stage. And then we've done a bunch of things together. And I think that only feeds the way we worked in this piece specifically. But, and we've talked about this before, but then you get on stage in a given night. And I know that, and I know people say, oh, I trust this person. But I know she understands my insecurities and understands what I'm great at and not great at on a given night or my personal life or whatever. And I know this person really does have my back. And that's that, you know, I don't know if that happens all the time.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing, the best mimicry is not exactness, it's humanity, you know? And so I think if we learned about our the characters we do and it's on the page, but so little is actually written about exact elements of relationships. You know, there we have the lines, we have our history, we know kind of who we are, you know, where we might talk about like where we're born and where how did we meet, even if but really what you are into ultimately seeing is Kelly and Will having shenanigans on stage together, because that's how to make Fred and Lily human and close, because Will and Kelly are close. I'm not going to take away from the true sense of acting, where if I met someone the first day, we would have lots of that journeying to do, and we'd find it. And that's how I've done it with many of my co-stars who I didn't know beforehand, you know, Paolo Jad, and I didn't meet them until I was playing the role. So you find different ways to have your chemistry and to have your familiarity. But I would say this one in particular is super fun and comfortable and easy, because we walked in the door having about 15 plus years or whatever of knowledge.
And doing a comedy too, if I know in a moment that Will can make Kelly laugh, or then it's not like I don't care if the audience thinks it's funny. As long as we're on the same wavelength and it's funny to us, that I feel like that means something. And I think that really translates, you know, into the stuff that
totally.
We're doing.
Totally. I mean, I think something happened to me along the way. I realized that maybe King and I, because it is such an ensemble piece, really, the children, the mothers, the wives. But I don't know when it happened that I stopped performing for the audience and started being for the people around me on the stage. And I have to assume that it's made me a better artist to be that way. I don't know. I hope. But it feels right. It feels right to be totally invested in Will Chase, and that you're getting a glimpse of it, or you're getting to peep in on it, rather than acting to you like I love him, or that I enjoy him, or that he's charming. I remember thinking that actually on stage one time, almost forgetting during King and I that there was even an audience. And it was this summer, because the Palladium, the audience is so far away. And I remember I'm here, I'm just with Ruthie and these children and these other women, and we're having a moment together, and they're spying on it. And I know we're doing theater, so it's not film, and so it is more presentational in certain ways. But the moment I started to really invest in that accidental idea is when I started to have more fun.
You know? So if you come see Kiss Me, Kate, just know that Kelly could care less about you.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
How I was going to ask how
doing
far
it for the audience.
How far back do you guys go? How did you, when did you first work together?
Oklahoma. Oklahoma, where the wind comes.
In Oklahoma.
In Oklahoma. I feel like we might have met before, but we did a production of Oklahoma in 2007 for the centennial birthday of the state. We played Laurie.
With a cast
with
of,
a centennial.
The cast of millions.
It just came right out. With a cast of millions. It was a huge, was the, huge yeah, production. Oklahoma it was a celebration of that statehood's birthday, which the show is about statehood.
Yes.
The statehood. And, we met together and we immediately had the craziest blast. And then over the years, gosh, we've done Bells Are Ringing. Yeah. We've done several readings together.
And then Nice Work If You Can Get It,
you came in. So we've had a blast together and we knew we would. And we've just recently decided we were really right. We were right.
And it's fun, too, with Kelly in general. She has such a steeped history in, the Rodgers and Hammerstein canon, that type of singing, that operatic, for lack of a better word, style. And she's even done opera. And we also approach this holding up that last revival, which was amazing. But, she and I both come from the world of how can we make this different? How can we, what's in the text that allows this to be different? We wanted to approach these characters with every production I've ever seen is Fred and Lily are exactly the same as Patrico and Kate. So the stuff that happens between these two in the piece, then they're off stage doing this. Mm-hmm. We wanted to, we got to find this love story or this piece is pretty much, it doesn't make any sense. Why do these people want to be around each other, even though they seem like they don't want to be around each other? And mm-hmm. I feel like we do that. I feel like I do want to be around you. That whole first scene is odd that we're at odds with each other completely, taking the mick out of each other. But I want to be in the room with you. You want to be in the room with me. And I think that's what the show's about.
Except for Sunday.
Well, since we've been talking so much about the kind of variety of another fighting.
Sorry,
actually,
we have an inside joke. Sorry, go ahead. I'm listening.
I was just going to say that since we're talking about the variety of genres of music you go through just within the show, three songs, like you were saying before, Corbin. And that's, to me, part of what is so wonderful about Cole Porter. And I want to talk about Cole Porter. I think whenever I hear a Cole Porter score, I'm always amazed by A, just how modern it sounds, and B, how much it makes me think of the composers who have kind of followed him. I listen to him and I think of Sondheim, I think of Gershwin, like I think of all sorts of anyone who is a smart songwriter who cares about words and is more than just clever, but you can tell really cares about like sort of the craft of writing. He makes me think of. So tell me a little bit about, from your character perspectives, what is the best thing about Cole Porter and singing his music?
It's interesting because I've with Cole Porter, I've always felt like he puts all of his ideas on the page.
Yeah. Yes, yeah. He's very extra.
And
so extra.
Well, and there's a beautiful thing about it if it can be done well. I think that's one of the most amazing things, but also can be a pitfall with Cole Porter. And it really just, to me, is just a testament to yet again how incredible this cast is. Because I look at a number like Always True to You, that it just keeps going. It just keeps going on and on. Or Where's the Life That Late I Led?
Right.
That it's just verse after verse after verse after verse. And Will, when you do that number, there's not a moment where I'm going, when is this number going to end? because Cole's writing is so witty, you have to find those moments and continue to make it new and keep it fresh and keep each idea pushing forward. And you do that so beautifully. So I think that Cole Porter is a brilliant writer and he requires brilliant performers.
You mentioned Sondheim. For me, lyrics and music melding. I mean, and this show in particular, with the amount of different styles of music, is insane. There's not a score like it. No. And I know everybody says there's not a score like it when the show that they're in, but there's really not a score that does. I mean, another opening, another show is the quintessential Broadway song, period. Another mm-hmm. open, another
yeah,
show.
Yeah, tears wise.
Every night. And I stand in the back and get to watch it because I'm watching everybody do it. And then you have operetta. You have
jazz.
You have jazz. You have music hall. You even have this little medieval, you know, the
Italian. You have the.
It's really unbelievable. Yeah. And then I was thinking about the things. Tom, Dick, or Harry is very, you said modern. I mean, it's very kind of like you hear the giggles still.
Yeah,
it's 2019.
Oh, yeah. Super
and
inappropriate.
Me and my dresser joke while you're out there working for Bianca, we always joke. So he's written a poem about a fictitious character and he's pronouncing your name wrong.
Right. Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I love that Porter's like, nope, this is totally going to make sense.
Yeah.
And it does. And it's this entertaining, wonderful thing. The lyrics in the show are insane. And you're right. There are 300 verses in every song, but the lyrics are so, I mean, brush up your Shakespeare is just, you know, mm-hmm. very witty of the time, obviously, right. in the 1940s. But still, yeah. I mean, it's pretty unbelievable.
Yeah, the lyrics and the lyrics are crazy. But the different styles of music, you know, I think about this sometimes. When did Most Happy Fella come out? Was that later?
Yeah.
Okay, because they must have tried to, I'm not going to say they copied, but the idea that you have like a country song and a jazz song and then an operetta song like Sposalizio and all that, you know, it must have been so intriguing to people that Cole Porter said, I'm just going to put it all out there and make this so that we go on this journey that is just exciting and it never stops. You know, my relationship with his music, it started so interesting. I mean, I've listened to him all my life, but different recordings and definitely the popular versions of it that my grandparents played. But when I was in, I had just finished like South Pacific or something, and I did a tour with the Boston Pops. We were in Florida. And then I did it with the same set with Marvin Hamlisch and the Seattle Symphony. And someone in the Boston Pops said, oh, we know exactly what your voice type is. So we've chosen all the music for you. We're certain of it. And I said, great, great. So I get it all. And it's all been, they've all bought all the arrangements. So there's no changing it. Mm-hmm. So it's all the alto stuff. I'm singing Anything Goes.
Oh, no.
And then I go Always True to You, Darling. Tom, Dick, or Harry with a little ensemble of men.
Please.
The only one I did, they had So in Love, but they had it in the Marin key. Oh. So they did get me the original key so I could sing it up in my normal. But I mean, did I sing So Nice to Come Home? Well, I can't remember what the one I sang with Marvin, but we ended up having to do that with piano because I needed the key to change. But I've sung a lot of the whole canon. I really have. And then, of course, Jason Daniely was on that tour with me, and he sang all the other stuff. And he sang.
Right.
So I learned so much of it in such a kind of a deep, nerve-wracking way. And I remember just thinking, this is crazy, amazing stuff. Like all over the board, these lyrics.
Times have changed.
You know, those lyrics in Anything Goes. I mean, we could sing that today, but with a little bit of a different context.
Right.
And you just think this man was so forward and so smart. And I think of one singular song that I never really heard as a kid, which is I Hate Men.
Yes.
And if nothing else from this show, we have a lot of young audience, especially young girls come for the reason across the table from me, Corbin Blue. But they are screaming for that number. And we've changed none of those lyrics.
Yeah.
And some of them seem a little old fashioned when I say, you know, something like, you know, like the first verse or something. But the man, he's going to tell you he's in town on business, but the business is that he gives his secretary. You know, these things are the kids are screaming for it. The older couples are twitching in their seats. And it's really funny to me that he wrote that. And if I sing it straight, it feels like to me, not the performance or anything, but the song itself feels like a change maker in the times that we're in, that a woman without seeming crazy or dismissive, like,
I mean, that's why, you're so great. Yeah.
But if you just sing it, no, but I feel like it makes people nervous. I mean, even in 2019, and cause people just didn't do that. You can sing I'm So in Love and you'll, you know, people can swoon or whatever they want to do.
Or like you said, you can sing it and be a crazy.
Well, I think the way it's been done, especially
the fact that you're singing it straight and matter of fact is so.
It makes people really.
Yeah.
It almost makes me nervous. Like, I'm sorry. But I don't. I lean into it. But it's not really funny, even, is what I'm saying. It's a little bit like, oh, she just, oh.
She's right. look at these.
But he wrote them. And back, you know, back, I could see where, and maybe one of the reasons I never knew the song that well is because it's always sung like, I hate man in the bar, you know, and it's like, I'm just a crazy person. So whatever I say doesn't even make sense. Well, it does. And it's kind of like, ouch. And listen.
I remember in rehearsals, before the door opened up and there's all the men in the pub.
Yeah.
Before we got to that, or we had done it once.
Yeah.
And I remember you having, not trouble, but with that last line, what would we do without him? And I remember you and Scott talking for like a half hour going, I've just sung this song about I hate men, but then I'm going to go, but guys, what will we do without them?
Yeah, I couldn't stand that line.
And then you went back and
opened the door again.
And one of the go-throughs went back and opened the door and it was like, right.
We chose
you're
sarcasm.
Asking a rhetorical
we chose
question.
Sarcasm.
That you, right.
Yes,
you chose,
we chose
and
sarcasm.
I was like, oh, that's so perfect.
Good. But what's interesting too, in this particular way, if I apologize when I'm singing it, like, and I don't mean apologize literally, but if there's any kind of nervousness or apology, which there is on, like on a Sunday when I'm feeling sad or you know, whatever it is, if I come out and I'm like, I hate man. And you know, there's not a confidence about it. It doesn't, something doesn't work. And I remember thinking to myself, and Scott said, I'll give you a few examples if you don't have men to hate. Because I said, I don't hate all men. I mean, I love my husband. You know, I had a pretty good, you know, I got a great brother, you know. But if you have to mean it. And you have to just stand there and mean it. And it makes people squirm, but it's the only way the song works.
Well, and Kate, and Kate deserves to get to, Kate of all people deserves to get to say this because the guys that have just left the stage have just, you know,
but
negotiated.
Sold me off.
Negotiated
sold me off. Said secrets, told secrets about
so
me.
So she gets to sing whatever she wants.
Yeah. Yeah, you asked about the different, or you said something about the characters being the same and not separated.
Yeah.
See, my biggest thought, and the only way I can make this make sense, is that Kate is a woman that everyone calls a shrew, but she is the one with the voice. She has the reason to be angry, and what she is saying is true. And so she is the strongest one. Lily has been treated, has been coddled and babied by men. She's an actress. She's she depends on them. She doesn't quite know where her anger, how to voice her anger or her frustration. And she's needy in certain ways. And Kate gives her the voice.
Yeah. I was just going to say that song and Kate in particular, it's like truth teller is what it is. And it's a truth telling song. And Lily has to kind of put on a different face depending on who she's with because of her circumstances.
But when Lily comes out dressed as Kate to be very angry with Fred for the flower situation, she beats her up as Kate.
Yeah.
You know, she finds her voice, you know. So I use them in tandem. Not necessarily as individual. I mean, as the same.
According to my needs.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, I was going to say with relation to the music, too, as a sign of what a little theater nerd I am, I was like, I was very excited to look up to the pit in the sky and see Paul Gemignani. Who, for people listening who don't know, is Sondheim's longtime music director. And it's interesting to see him in a non-Sondheim context.
Yeah.
This might be the first time I have. But how much does having a music director kind of that caliber make a difference for you all as you're going about singing this challenging show?
Well, for me, it's a dream just because I've known who he is since I was in college and wanted to, when I was a conductor, wanting to be him. Then when I became an actor, I was like, well, I want to at least work with him. And then I got to do Edwin Drood. But it's like otherworldly because he's like, if you don't know Paul, you think, oh, he's very intimidating and scary. Then you know him, he's a teddy bear, but then he's very intimidating and scary. And his knowledge, and he's a former drummer too, as am I. So there's this innate kind of thing. It doesn't mean he doesn't know, you know, what instruments play what. And he has this, he also loves actors and loves theater. And not every musical director is like that. And he just loves... He gets to pick and choose whatever he wants to do. Paul Gemignani does. Mm-hmm. And Scott was like, Kiss Me, Kate. He loves this score. He did the revival,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, he did the 20 years
ago. 20 years ago. And you can just tell he loves, and he wants people to hear this score. He wants people to hear world-class singers sing it. And he constantly tells us that. But he'll give me acting notes, meaning he'll come to me, he'll go, I think if you did this on this line or this lyric, and it's like, oh, yeah, he approaches it from an acting place, which, again, all musical directors don't. So I love looking up there and seeing him behind those glasses and that baton. And he's just a hero. He's a hero of mine. He really is.
It's powerful to work with someone who has experience gives you power, and you can misuse it or use it in a beautiful way. And Paul just sits back and he's like, he's just done it enough that he just doesn't overthink anything. And he doesn't allow you to. He's like, whatever. You know, you walk in the room, but I don't know if this is the right key. We'll change it.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what if I don't
know?
Have,
I know.
He'll tell me later. Well, what if I don't? Well, we'll work on it then. You know, and he literally sits, like he sits just with his arms crossed and he's just watching, and you'll say, I'm not feeling well. I'll play louder. Or whatever it is. He just has an answer for it because he doesn't sweat anything anymore. He just says, we're fine. Everything's fine.
He looks kind of immovable up there. Just like he's there and he's like doing his thing.
Yeah. And that's how he is from jump. And Will, what you said, if you don't know him, which I've never worked with him, he scared the shit out of me from day one. Yeah. And I love him to death now. He really, really does care about the music and for the performers. And I feel like it was once we started working on Bianca and I started tapping, and he was just into it. All of a sudden, it was like the music of the musicality of this the rhythms of the taps, and then all of a sudden, you know, matching with the rhythms of the drums, he just got into it, and I just felt like this change, and I was like, we're cool, we're cool, good.
He's the perfect combo. He's the perfect combo for me and I hate the word purist. But he's the perfect combo of somebody who really understands the piece and what the intention was. But along what Kelly was saying, but if we need to change the key or we need to change this thing, then we can. So it's this marriage of theater is live and living and happening now. Mm-hmm. But we're also doing this piece that exists, and we owe it to Cole Porter, the original orchestrator, and all this stuff. And I love that they both can coexist, because I've met purists that, nope, we're doing exactly what was written 150 years ago.
Yeah.
Or I've met people, so we want Fred to wear a clown suit. Do you know what I mean? So I like the marriage him, his modernism, and his purity, for lack of a better word.
We actually had a conversation about that with opera. He says the reason I didn't want to conduct opera, I didn't want to feel like we couldn't evolve and change and grow and just feel, you know, what each individual singer might how they might reinterpret it. He's just so laid back because he's good, and he can afford to be. It's been really special to.
We love you, Paul.
Yeah, man.
Well, I feel like, I mean, what you just said, Will, about the sort of blend of modernism and purity that he brings out, that really speaks to the production itself too. And it sounds like your approaches to the roles, that there are moments when just singing it straight and doing it straight speaks volumes on its own because of like what's on the page.
Yeah.
And there are other moments when there's an opportunity to do something a little bit more noticeable.
And that's why Scott Ellis is great too, because Scott's great at finding those. Let's dive into what we know is real and there on the page, and then stuff that we can, like you said, investigate and reinterpret. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, there's two things that I'm just not thinking that Paul did in our show that are pretty, for me. The last song that had to be completely really rewritten, Amanda Green, with the lyric, because we can't come out and I can't sing in a soprano, high soprano, I am ashamed that women are so simple. You know, let's put our hands under the feet of our lover.
Right,
you know,
right.
We changed everything, and then I'm still singing in that key, and there's somehow no strength to it. There's no purpose to it. It's still weak. I mean, not because of a soprano, but because just the way it's written, it was written to be very, very light. And Paul's like, I'm dropping it like a fourth. And he put it into my speaking voice, which I don't sing for the rest of the show. I don't sing like that. I sing higher, I sing lower, but I don't sing in my person's voice. And I come out and I say, I am ashamed that people are so simple, in that tone. And that was Paul. And the other thing that I knew he had my back, his finger's in a door. I didn't know what to do. I slammed my finger on the door. The show stops. I've never had to do that before, but I said, like, I need help. I need help. And when Will releases me from the door, I didn't know what to do. And I turned around and I just started to sing. And Paul.
Right on it.
The music, the orchestra was with me. Not the second note. It was with me when I began to sing.
Whoa.
As if we had planned it.
Wow.
So he's telepathic.
Well, I don't know. I don't know, but I will
so.
Never forget that. I will never forget that it was a confusing time to have to stop a show. But you don't want to have to like, audience, excuse us, we're going to take a break. You don't want to have to do that. And you don't know how to get back into it. And the audience erupted in applause because he was like, go. Like he just, he was like a hawk.
He's never not watching. You can look up there at him. He's never not.
I mean, he might be
watching,
sitting like this. But
he's watching the scenes. Yeah, he's
awesome. He watches the fight call every night. I mean, he's totally immersed. He just sits there and he wants to be a part of it and he loves it. And now we have his son.
Yes.
It's
yes.
a good, happy place.
Yeah.
Who is a brilliant mind as well. Yeah. So.
Well, maybe I should just have a Jim and Yanni focused podcast.
You should.
I'm thinking.
I'll come.
Can I come?
It'll be a party. Well, thank you so much all for coming. This is super fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Pleasure.
Thanks.
Kiss Me, Kate is playing at Studio 54 on Broadway, and it was recently extended through June there. And the show will have a cast recording of this Broadway cast with Ghostlight Records soon. If you like Billboard on Broadway, please subscribe on iTunes. Give us a nice review or some stars if you feel so moved. You can also find us on Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, among other platforms. If you would like to find me on social media, I'm at Rebecca Milzoff on Twitter. I'm at YaDownWithRMM on Instagram. And you can use hashtag Billboard on Broadway to express your opinions about the podcast. Hope to have you back next week.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.